At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It is 1888 in Kiev. A new statue is raised. The statue is to a man named Kaminsky, a hero to the Ukrainians, to the Crimean Cossacks, to the Russians, even to the Soviets in the future. Who is he? 17th century man, and on the statue's plinth, and originally, because it was a product of Russian nationalists, activist nationalists in Kiev, they wanted to write, "Oh, it will be better. Oh, it will be more beautiful when in our Ukraine there are no Jews, no Poles, no Christians from the West." Uniate Church. It goes on to say, "A united, indivisible Russia to Hetman Bohdan Kaminsky." Professor Eugene Finkel is here. His new book is Intent to Destroy, Russia's 200-year quest to dominate Ukraine. That statue is a big clue as to what was happening in the 17th century, what is happening in the 21st century. Eugene Finkel is the Kenneth Keller Professor of International Affairs, Johns Hopkins University of Advanced International Studies. He joins us from Europe to comment on Kaminsky's statue. Professor, the phrase is that they did not write, although they were approved by the Tsar, I believe. They tell a story of woe. Who was he? Why was he important to everyone that they raised a statue to him? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me, John. So, who Bohdan Khmelnytsky is. Essentially, his story begins in early 17th century when the area that we now know as Ukraine is a part of Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. He is a local nobleman, an Orthodox Christian, which makes him very different from the majority of the Polish nobility who are Catholic, who grows up in Ukraine, serves in the Polish army, and then starts a rebellion of people like him, or people who we now know as Ukrainians, against Poland. He wants to go his own way. He cares about the Orthodox Church. He does not want people who we now call Ukrainians to become Catholic Poles. So he starts a rebellion. There is also a pretty tragic love story and a conflict over wife and and his deaf son with agents of the Polish state. And after this rebellion, he manages to defeat the Polish armies and create a semi-independent Ukrainian state in central and eastern Ukraine. So he is celebrated by Ukrainians as essentially a founding father of the first really Ukrainian state that existed. But then he's too weak to win a long war against Poland. Poland is much larger. Poland is much more technologically advanced. So he needs protection. And for protection, he goes east to Moscow, to the Tsars, who are also Orthodox Christians, speak a similar, though different language, trace their history to the same medieval state, Kievan Rus, that got destroyed by the Mongols, and eventually he swears allegiance to the Tsar of Moscow. So from the Russian perspective, he becomes the person who unites Ukraine with Russia, and that's why he's also celebrated by the Tsarist government and by the Russian nationalists. And this, you know, different versions of who this person is, I think, go to the core of the current war, who Ukrainians are. Are they a different state or a different nation, a different group that deserve their own statehood, or are they just Russians?
The story starts earlier than Smolensky, but he is someone is keen to, his presence explains a deal from the 17th century to today. Just a note about before that, lost in the fog of myth and legend. You know, the Hollywood saying, when legend becomes fact, print the legend. The Russians print the legend a lot, so we need to make certain we understand. The word Rus means rower. Likely Vikings, but also in another version, the professor tells me, could be Slavs, could be a combination. Kiev was the original place that the rowers were comfortable in their plundering up and down the river systems. Kiev is the original center of Russian culture. It is why it is so important to Moscow to make it united or part of our world, the Russian world. I mention that because intervening were the Mongols, several versions of invasions. Everybody gets mixed up. Professor, I read it from the American point of view. We're all mixed up. Ukrainians are all mixed up, but they have a definite sense of themselves as an independent nation, which is why we get to Smolensk. After Smolensk, however, there is the 18th century, and I find it, there's synchronicity here because Smolensk is about the time that the United States was a colonial place for people to come from Europe, chiefly from Great Britain, 17th century. So you think of this as not just the Pilgrims, but the founding of the Massachusetts Bay colonies. That's going on while Smolensk is a hero to the Cossacks and the Russians and the Ukrainians. In the 18th century, there's a date that's important here, 1783, because that's when Russia is organized under the Tsars and Catherine the Great to become an imperial project. Do I say that correctly, Professor? An imperial project. What did that mean to Moscow?
Right, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, the story obviously begins long before the 17th century with a medieval state that you mentioned named the Kievan Rus that got destroyed by the Mongol invasion in the 30th century. And that's the place where the Russians and the Ukrainians trace their history to. And that's the origin of the Russian idea that, you know, Ukrainians are actually Russian. So fast forward to, you know, 18th century from Bohdan Khmelnytsky and him swearing allegiance to the Tsar, the Cossack idea and the idea of Khmelnytsky when he did so is that there will be a military alliance between his state, the proto-Ukrainian state, and the Russian state and the Russian Tsar in Moscow, but they will keep their language, they will keep their culture, they will keep their privileges. The Tsars saw it very differently. The Tsars saw it as this state and Ukrainians fully joining Russia, and gradually the Russian government start dismantling the freedoms that the Cossacks have, their institutions, their right, until eventually in late 18th century they abolish this proto-state completely and integrate Ukraine and also other territories that they're joining the empire at that time to the Russian Empire. So we're talking about southern Ukraine. We're also talking about Crimea, which was an independent, which was an different entity, first independent, then, you know, a vassal state of the Ottoman Empire, and the Crimean Tatars, who are Muslim and speak a completely different language. That's where the Russian, westward expansion begins. And in Ukraine towards the Black Sea, and eventually over time in 18th century, all this area comes under Russian control. And there are actually quite interesting parallels between the United States or the colonial period and that period. You know, similarly to what we see in North America with New England and New France and New Spain, they start calling this area New Russia. They start inviting people to move from different parts of Europe, Sweden, Poland, you know, from the South, Mennonites. They move in large numbers to this area that is now Ukraine, and many of them later on go settle in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. So they see it as a colonial project. Essentially, this area that they open it up for Russian control, for settlement by different group, and that's how Ukraine of today becomes so diverse, with many different groups living side by side. But what is clear to them, that they're not Russian. You know, they can be many things, but Russian they're not. From the Russian perspective, this land is Russian. And that's the core of the conflict that they're having on the ground already then. Because Moscow wants to, and St. Petersburg want to force those people to become Russians, and people on the ground resist.
The book is Intent to Destroy. Eugene Finkel, Professor Johns Hopkins, is the author. Russia's 200-year quest to dominate Ukraine. 1783, that was the Peace of Paris for the United States. 1783, that is when the Imperial Project took over the Black Sea coast that we see now in warfare. When we come back, when does Eugene's family get involved? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.